You're listening to episode 264 of Lifestyle Locker Radio with Christina Mondlachiani. Hi, I'm Dr. Josh Hant, and welcome to Lifestyle Locker Radio, where we help you create an awesome life and lifestyle. From nutrition to fitness, mindfulness to peak performance, and relationships to money mindset, we bring you on an amazing journey to help you unleash your human potential. Hey, it's Dr. Josh Hant here, and we need to talk about your health, your fitness, and your lifestyle. I know you, if you're like me, you've seen sickness and disease and even death in your life. And we know the leading causes of death in the United States are cancer, heart disease, and diabetes. Many of these conditions and diseases are considered lifestyle-based. And I know that lifestyles in the United States and other countries are not where they should be. We also know that they make you more vulnerable to other sicknesses and conditions. We tend to get our advice and recommendations on health from commercials and marketing, from fast food to pharmaceuticals, and not from experts with real world experience. Unfortunately, we follow people or products who don't walk the walk or talk the talk. They simply just don't care about your health. It's just about their bottom line. I know we've heard it from our friends and from even our own self-talk that we don't have enough time, we can't make the changes, or there's just too much to do to be healthy. But there is a way to actually take control of your lifestyle and have the accountability and the support you need. We can be bigger than our excuses. For the past 14 years as a chiropractor, I've worked and continue to work with thousands of patients with their lifestyle and ultimately their health. I am now bringing the same philosophy to the online space where we can work as a group to get better, stronger, healthier, and be bigger than our excuses every single day. I've created the 3065 Lifestyle Shift Program to be an online-based, training-based program where you get to learn and be engaged with others in your journey towards a healthy lifestyle and ultimately a healthier life. To be part of this amazing movement, it's just $5 a month. Yes, it's only $5 a month, and that seems too good to be true. Well, it's not. So for the price of a gourmet coffee, you will have access to an amazing program and amazing people that want the best for you too. So when you dive into the content below this video to learn about our lifestyle philosophy, you'll see that we are incredibly unique. No other online program focuses on lifestyle the way we do and delivers the quality and the quantity of content that we do for just $5 a month. And it's not just about the movement. There's a lot more. It's really about your health. So check out the details and other videos below. And when you sign up, I'll even send you the ebook, Inside the Locker, which dives deeper into creating an awesome lifestyle. I look forward to seeing you on the inside of the Lifestyle Locker 3065 Lifestyle Shift Program. Hey everyone, welcome back to Lifestyle Locker Radio. We have an amazing guest today, Christina Mondlachiani, if I'm saying it correctly. Again, I will mess these things up a little bit.
Nobody has ever said it so perfectly.
All right, yay. True. Perfect. Well, I'm very glad to have you here. As the co-founder of Mind Valley, books I've read and videos I've watched, pre-even knowing you, hearing your story, I'm very excited to have you on the show and to bring people through some of your journey to what's brought you to where you are today. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes, it's an honor.
Yes. So you're the first from Estonia. Very cool. I want to bring the audience in, because a lot of people have heard from Mind Valley, our audience. Our people, if you will, our tribe, is definitely familiar with Mind Valley, because you're such a huge, huge organization and your messaging is amazing, but you're a very individual person as well inside there. So give us a little bit of your background, your story, you know, what brought you to where you are today?
Yeah, I don't want to go too far into my background. I'm sorry, because I've lived enough on this earth to actually...
Yeah, just some of the good high points there.
Half a day with my story. But, but the thing is that, yes, I'm the lesser known co-founder of Mindbelly, mostly because it was a choice in the old days to just be in the background. And probably one of the interesting ideas I had at that time, that a wife has to support her husband. So... I am, as you said, I'm an Estonian. Just to make it very short, I was born in Soviet Union and brought up in Soviet Union, which actually explains a lot of my quirks. And then I got married with Vishen. It was a long time ago now, and moved to US where he lived, had nothing there to do because I was unemployable. I didn't have a visa and my education was questionable by American standards. So I helped him start Mindvalley in 2003. So I was from the very start. But as I said, I had an interesting idea at that times that a woman should not work with her husband. I also was a little bit obstinate. I wanted to do my own thing. It was only years later that I came back to Mindvalley and stuck with it. So about 10 years I've been actually working in Mindvalley. Before that, I was associated with Mindvalley. But I am the face of Mindvalley in Russian language, because I started Mindvalley in Russia. In Russian language, actually, many countries that speak Russia. That has been my connection. Only a few years ago, I came on stage and started becoming a little bit more vocal. And I actually corrected you earlier today. I am divorced by now with Vishen, yeah. But we are still friends and we're still co-parenting, we're still partners in business, and everything is fine. It's just that now he's an ex-husband. So it's in a nutshell.
In a nutshell.
With no drama.
Yeah. So, you know, in our pre-conversation and some of the emails that we had back and forth, you're a very powerful woman. And I know you were behind the scenes, but I really truly believe there is something to that partnership that you had and even have today with Vishen and Mindvalley, because you're now an outspoken, you're being heard all over the world. You're the voice for Mindvalley in Russian speaking countries. That's nothing to be shy, you know, to shy away from. That's quite amazing. So I applaud you for owning you. So authentic part of you. And I know you love to talk about authenticity. Mm-hmm. I know you love to talk about happiness. And these are some conversations I've actually had with friends earlier today in one of my mastermind calls. We were talking about some of the things that, you know, some of our quirks, some of the things that hold us back. And for me, just I'll share this with you, because I'd love you to dive into some of the happiness is, mm-hmm. you know, I don't want to call it a flaw, but one of my things that I'm working on is that I tend to compare myself to others. In my mm-hmm. in my profession, I'll compare myself to other podcasters. I'll compare myself to other runners and athletes. And, you know, I don't look in the mirror and go, wow, look how far you've come. Look what you've achieved. Look what you should be grateful for. I tend to dive back sometimes into like, oh, I wish I had what Christina had. I wish I had with, you know, like whatever it may have been. Right.
Yeah. I get it.
Those things. So can you talk a little bit about happiness? Because I feel that's a big piece of that puzzle of mine. That's kind of gets lost from time to time. I kind of have to keep reeling it in like on a fishing rod.
You know, it's you've touched upon so many interesting things. First of all, comparing yourself to others is not really a quirk of yours. It's a culture in which we grow up. We are actually taught to compare ourselves to others, because we are told for entertainment from very early on, we are told a lot of inspirational stories, and it starts very well, like mm-hmm. like everything, you know, how the saying goes, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah.
So obviously we watch movies about people who, despite everything, make it. We read biographies of people who have achieved amazing things, and it is a natural tendency to compare yourself to others, and it is good as long as it inspires you. But for most of us, we don't even notice the moment when, from being inspirational, it starts being more of a drag. Mm-hmm. So we have one of the author, actually he was just a speaker, he wasn't like a full-time author in Mindvalley, but we had one speaker, a great guy in California, Kamal Roy Kant, he's actually an investor and wildly successful, wrote a book, Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends on It. So he tells that story how he, while being in California, you know, in investment niche, he would compare himself to others. So if he achieves something, he makes a million, somebody does 10 million, he makes 10 million, somebody does 100 million, and so it goes. So there's always someone who has done better and more than you. I was just yesterday talking to a cousin of mine, and we were discussing going to Antarctica and everything. I said, you know, as long as there's Richard Branson who goes to space, you know, all those achievements are nothing. So that's the thing with us. There's always, you know, there's always an Elon Musk there to compare yourself to. Mm-hmm. And Kamal's story was pretty intense because at some point he became so depressed. He was staying in bed for a week. Wouldn't move and actually thinking of ending his life while he had a completely successful multi-million dollar business, or I don't know the particulars exactly. So that's the tricky thing about comparison. But then if you know me better, you'll know one of my favorite things that I like to say is that there are no recipes in life. There is no one thing that works in every situation. That's the beauty of life, that it requires different approaches and different circumstances. You know, there is night, there is day, there is cold, there's warm. And depending on which are your circumstances, you need to apply one or another thing. So for some people, it is good to look for role models and to compare themselves. For some people, it is dangerous, almost, you know, dangerous to their life. So I wouldn't have an answer to you. I just want to say that you're very, very normal because everybody does that. And especially if you look at social media, you know, Instagram, we kind of joke about that, and we all understand the situation that it's a facade, it's edited, not just the face, not just the figure. Life is edited. Mm. Life is photoshopped, like to the point of what's actually happening. We understand that, yet we still do that. We still look, oh, you have more followers, oh, your followers are more engaged, oh, you've been to this country and haven't been to a new country this year, I should go and do something. It's a natural part of human life. Now, when it comes to happiness, it's a different topic. Okay. And here it's interesting because I think, and that's a particularly interesting conversation for me with men, that happiness is incredibly undervalued again as well. And that might sound a little bit funny because if I say something like everybody wants to be happy, nobody will argue with me. Yes, everybody wants to be happy. Yet if you ask, if you pull out your list of goals for 2021 and you ask your friends to pull out a list of goals of 2021, not a single one of them would have anything related to happiness. Like, I'd like to be happy, personally happy, or I'd like to figure out how happiness works. I'd like to define what is happiness for me, or practice or increase my happiness by 10%. We just don't set goals like that, which is also not surprising because, and again, society has evolved. So what is true right now in the beginning of the 21st century might have been different 50 years ago, 100 years ago. So I'm talking about right now. So if you listen to the public discourse right now on happiness, then the messages that you hear is that don't chase happiness, then you will not reach it. Or happiness is irrelevant. Meaning is important. Live a meaningful life and you'll be happy. Or an axiom that nobody argues, but it's actually not even an axiom, it's a huge myth, that you need to be successful and then you will be happy. Hmm. We, if you, especially men, why I like to talk about that with men, because men are so focused on success that for them, saying that happiness might be in any way important is almost uncomfortable. Or a little bit awkward, like, really? You know, I'm a man, I should just chase success, which is a very interesting thing, because if you look at it from another angle, I do not know if you have children or family.
I don't have any children. I just have a four-legged, hairy of a dog.
Well, you have four-legged thingies, and yeah. You probably have people that you love, friends or, yes.
I have nephews.
So if you ask yourself, what would you like for them? You would most likely want them to be happy.
Of course, yeah. Agreed.
So we don't allow ourselves to admit that we want ourselves to be happy. Yet when it comes to the closest and the people that we love the most, the only thing that we truly want for them is just to be happy. So it is a very interesting situation where happiness is important, yet we don't dare to acknowledge that it's important.
Yeah.
And society's conversations doesn't help with that either, because somehow happiness is considered the soft topic, which is, it's not for the ambitious.
Mm. Yeah, and it seems like, and just to go in full circle, you're saying, I agree with you 100% as far as, men, that's me. I mean, you're talking to me and with me. I think men and people potentially will connect, like you said, happiness to something, right? Like it has to be like, okay, if I achieve this goal, or if I get that car, or if I get this interview, or if I get whatever it may be, they're going to attach happiness to it versus bringing happiness to chasing that goal, or happiness to having a conversation, or happiness to something.
It's, here again, you touched upon two things which are very important. One of them is the concept of happiness itself. We'll talk about that, but I've very briefly mentioned that this, when I reach this, I'll be happy mm-hmm. model is very treacherous, because it's never yeah. happening, which is why we go for success, hoping that when we are successful, we'll be happy on a personal level. But if you look at it in an abstract way, we know that success doesn't bring happiness. We know it. We've seen so many successful people being incredibly unhappy, or even killing themselves. Mm-hmm. So we know that. Yet when it comes to ourselves, we go for success because we believe that happiness is the end goal, or the result, or the prize. So one of the quotes which has started, people picked it up from one of my latest speeches, and I might make it into a quote by repeating it a few times. So I think that happiness is not a prize at the end of the journey. It's not a byproduct. It's not unimportant. We have to learn to make it a priority. And I'll give you a little bit of research, because, we understand that success won't make you happy, but still we do that. It's the way I can go deep into why this happens, but yeah. I don't want to. The thing is that there is research that shows that there is a correlation between success and happiness, but it goes in the opposite direction. You're much more likely to achieve success when you're in a happy state.
Yeah.
And we never think about that. We actually believe, because our paradigm is work yourself to death, sacrifice the most important, the most dear, the most, the most painful things for success. So obviously nobody even listens to that. There are very few people who are willing to hear you when you say that, happiness is not secondary. It's not unimportant, and it's not the prize at the end of the journey. Yes, I agree that meaning is important, but you will bring more meaning if you're doing it while you are in a good state. And here, if you don't mind, I'll share a story, which actually, if people know me, you would have heard this story from years ago when I was just getting back into Mind Valley, but I was still doing the thing from my past life. I was very much engaged in philanthropy. In the old days. So I worked with refugees, I worked with marginalized people in Asia, with HIV positive people. So I've worked with a lot of such problems and topics. And it was at the time when I was working with refugees in Asia, and these people would have lost everything in their life, their possessions, their loved ones, their home, everything, hope for the future. So a lot of tragic stories. Yeah. On the other side, I was helping Vision to build Mind Valley. And Mind Valley is about teaching people how to live happy, extraordinary, meaningful, fulfilling, whatever lives. And Vision was speaking at an event with the Dalai Lama. So we had an audience with him, and I asked Dalai Lama, I said, look, I have these two worlds in my universe, and they just don't match. And I don't know how I can be building a company that teaches people to live happy lives while I'm helping other people who are very tragic. And he said, Christina, you can't help anyone if you're not happy. So all that story about having meaning in your life, helping others, I've been in philanthropy long enough. People who come into charity from their own personal pain, they actually cause also a lot of pain there. They're just not aware of that very often. Philanthropy is such a bizarre area. There's so much money in the world, and yet all those problems exist. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the times it's broken people wanting to help broken people. It doesn't work like that.
Hmm. I think that's so neat that happiness needs to come first. And I think that's part of my challenge and my solution, you know, for me as well, you know, in that battle, a lot of times that I have chasing the thing, whether it's a shiny object or whether it's an interview or whether it's success on whatever level or relationship, I chase that. And you expect, people want to expect the happiness to, like, oh, there's the carrot, there's the happiness. And it never shows up, and it cannot show up. So knowing that, what are some of the things that people, like, maybe some skill sets or some activities or things to do that you can actually, okay, how do I become happy? Like that's such a big question, I think, that everybody will ask, like, okay, how do I become happy?
Well, it's my life's journey, right? So that would be another half of the day. But, you know, for one thing, you have to prioritize it. That's where it starts. And you're in personal growth, so you know how personal growth works. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. If you want to achieve, if you want to be healthy, you have to prioritize health, right? You have to understand it. You have to learn it. You have to work on it. If you want to have a good relationship in your life, you have to work on your relationships. If you want to be successful, you need to work on your, you know, money mindset, on your whatever skill set, on your confidence, on all those things. Yet when it comes to happiness, we believe it's a byproduct.
Yeah.
So isn't that a little bit funny?
Very.
We kind of want to be happy, yet we think that learning about it is somehow going to harm us. So a lot of the times when people say, if you chase happiness, you're not going to get it, it's because we misunderstand what happiness is and the mechanisms that bring us that. We humans are very simple, actually, because there is, you know, you probably know the difference between instant gratification and long-term strategies to feel better.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times we talk about happiness, but we only talk about it as an emotion and something which we are trying to achieve with this instant gratification type of mechanisms. Then obviously, if you're going to do that, you're going to get jaded. There is a theory of hedonic adaptation. The more you do something, the less it has effect on you. So it's very, actually, if you study it, it's all very anatomical. It's not so so complicated. But the thing is that because we deprioritized it, we made this really weird thing that don't chase it, otherwise you won't reach it. Then that's why there is so much misunderstanding. There's a lot of research about happiness. Psychology has been researching it. They don't call it also often happiness, but if you go for like such keywords as positive affect or if you research, for example, the psychological approaches how to deal with emotions, then you will learn a lot of really necessary skills to feel happier. So for one, what I usually say when I do my training on hacking happiness, totally not my kind of words, but I do this training on hacking happiness, the advice number one that I give is define what it is for you, because you cannot chase a unicorn. You don't know what you're going to get. So define what it is for you. And here I have a few suggestions. First of all, define happiness as a state, because a state is a much more stable condition. It may be a state of flow, although it's not particularly a state of flow, because state of flow can be also treacherous and slippery road. As I said, there's nothing black and white in this world. But for someone, it might be the state of flow. For someone, it might be the state of bliss and the being present. You have to define your own definition of happiness, but try to focus on the state, not emotion, because emotion, by its nature, is fluid. Emotion, let's say, if you are excited and you share your excitement, as you share, excitement subsides and changes into another emotion, because that's how emotions work. They change all the time if you work with them properly. But even if you bottle them, they change. They just start stinking. Don't define happiness as an emotion. Define it as a state. And understand that it is your personal definition. And if you define happiness as a state, if you prioritize it, if you set a goal for the year 2022 to figure out how it works, you're much more likely to actually feel happier by the end of the next year. Mm.
So can you just share with the audience, because I'm mixing things up in my head a little bit, you know, being in a certain state versus an emotion, how would you define the difference so that we can have a little bit of an understanding? Because they're big words. And even for me, I'm like, okay, I understand the emotion thing very easily, but then I was almost putting the emotion into the state.
So there is a little bit older theory. I think current research, psychological research, gives you more material, but it might be a little harder to explain. But there's a little bit older theory created by Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, who actually popularized the state of flow.
Yeah.
But he also was writing about the hedonistic adaptation. So I just use it in a slightly different context, in the context that whatever you do, you get used to that and you get back to your natural resting state. Okay. So the theory of hedonistic adaptation says that we have a certain set point of our happiness. You can say it's happiness, but essentially what it means is how at peace you are with the world, how at peace you are with your life, how happy, how optimistic you are. But it's a certain set point. And when something happens to you, whether it's a very intense positive emotion, or let's say joyful, pleasant emotion, or it's a very intense painful emotion, it passes, because all those intense emotional experiences, they evolve, they change, they pass. And no matter what happens to you, you get back to your regular set point. So the idea of training your happiness is to learn to raise the set point. So that whatever happens to you, you get back to your resting state, which is a little better than it was, let's say, a year ago. So a very simple example would be from money life. There is a research that shows that people who win a lottery, let's say $1 million in a lottery, there are quite a few people like that. They have been researched. The funny thing is that in 2 years after they win their $1 million, they get back to the same financial condition where they started from. This is the financial set point. We have a lot of set points in many areas in our life. That's just how it is. So happiness is another thing, another phenomenon like that. There is a set point. So what I suggest is that you focus on long-term strategies, the ones which raise your set point. Usually they also require a little more investment and time to work on, whether that's building meaningful, strong connections in your life, or letting go of your traumas, forgiving, or learning to work with painful things. One thing I want to suggest also, when you define happiness, it's not rose-tinted glasses, obviously. And here I like to quote, she's a PhD in psychology and a TED speaker, Susan David. I love her work very much. So she has this brilliant quote, pain is the price of admission to meaningful life. So one set of learning happiness is to learn to deal with the dark, with the painful, with what we don't like. That's one part of it. Because happiness, it's like, let's say, I'll bring a funny analogy, nutrition. You are healthy not only when you don't eat toxic things or bad things for you, but when you also eat enough good things. So the same with happiness. It's not only about figuring out how to see and value and be grateful for the positive. It's also how to work with the painful stuff.
I resonate with the pain is the price of a meaningful life. Is that what it was?
Pain is the price of admission to meaningful life. Yes. Yeah.
And I think, and I shared this on other shows, on other podcasts, and I, just for our audience, as I got into ultra marathoning, you know, I thought, like, when I finished my first marathon, I'm always like, all right, you're done. You hit it before 40 years old. We're good. And I said, I think I could do more. And I had hypothermia after. I mean, I was in bad shape. And I think I connected with pain or discomfort as becoming one of my best teachers. And that's why people go, why do you want to run 50 miles or 100 miles? I go, it's you, because you get out of your mind, or you get out of your physical body, then you get out of your mind and you connect to yourself. For me, it becomes like this amazing learning experience. And I know it's maybe not what she meant,
No, she meant a slightly different thing. She meant that if you have any meaning in your life, let's say meaningful connections, there is a danger of losing a connection, whether to relationship situation or to death, right? Mm-hmm. So, of course, there's a question, do you make meaningful connections or do you avoid pain, right? And this whole idea of Zen, of non-attachment, it's not good for this life on the physical earth. But what you're talking about is actually a beautiful analogy, because I like to bring an analogy. I don't run too much, but a lot of people do gym or any kind of physical sport, right? So we another interesting thing about contemporary society is that we demonize pain. We really demonize it, and we are uncomfortable about it. We don't know how to work with it. We don't know how to talk with it about it, and we don't know how to be next to a person who is in pain at all. That's the skill that a lot of us are completely lacking. So analogy that I like to bring to understand the place of pain in your happy life, because happy life is not going to be absence of pain, is when you do a very like intense workout and every single muscle in your body hurts. And the next day you can't go up the stairs because everything hurts. This is the kind of pain which it is painful. Objectively speaking, it is painful on your body, but you enjoy it because it reminds you that your cells are alive. There is energy running through your body, that you're alive, that this is bringing, you know, stronger body or more agile body, right? So this is the kind of pain which we embrace and we have no problems with. So our emotional pain or pain in our life, we can learn to take it the same way as the marker of you being alive. I'm not the proponent of the idea that whatever happens to you is for the better. No, there are objectively bad events. My mom just lost her sister. There's nothing good about that, nothing. But still, you can, and that will sound a little bit strange, you can enjoy the pain just as a reminder that you are alive.
That's so true. And, you know, I guess I just took it in another direction, but I guess
yes, you did.
I did, but it's, you know, that became my, you know, just my understanding, my experience. But I get that, you know, the meaningful relationships versus avoiding loss or avoiding that pain. I could treat it exactly the same way. I just, you know, maybe need to invest more time and energy into that space, but it can be very powerful because I've been told, you know, and I hate to keep using my experiences, but I think it's just a great way to connect with the people that are listening is, you know, if I come home from like a busy day in the office and you see a lot of people, help a lot of people, get, you know, people telling me great things. And, you know, we see a certain volume of people or whatever the thing is. I'm like, I wish we could have just helped one more. My wife's like, why aren't you happy? I'm like, I'm happy. I'm just, you know, like that type of like, she senses like my angst of, I guess, chasing the carrot that's not really there. And you know, in my service, if you will, of other people. So, and I maybe have to ask this question, but there's gotta be, or there, it doesn't have to be, but something like, is there an action step or something simple? I know we, you know, we find the meaning, right? We find that we spoke about, like finding what happiness is to you is the first defining thing, that state that we have to be in. What would be the second piece of that puzzle?
You know, you remind me a little bit. We do intuition trainings from time to time. I have this interesting side of me. Uh-huh. And I'm very pragmatic because I was born in Soviet Union. So I love Stephen Hawking, even though he's a little bit on the extreme side of pragmatic scientist. But there's this interesting thing because people often try to understand that. And my answer usually to this is, you know, you're trying to understand logically with your logic mind something which is the complete opposite, right? So you could come up with action steps and then you would get busy doing the action steps necessary to be successful in the art of happiness.
Okay.
And that is going to be the opposite of what
the opposite of happiness. all right. Okay, I've got work to do. We'll admit that.
No, you know that. Okay, I'll give you another theory.
Yeah.
Because you're such an interesting guy, I'd like to talk to you more, because you make me actually understand my theory better.
Cool. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing.
Really good. It is really good because you challenge the things. I am used to talking to people who are a little bit more ready for that, right? Not ready. It didn't sound right. I would say they are okay to just flow. Right. And you are an achiever.
Yeah.
And achievers are the hard people when it comes to happiness. Okay. So I have another theory. That's why I like, because you resist, right?
My nature.
Which is great. So there is another theory. There are two states that we can be in, resistance or flow. And now I'm not talking about flow as Chicken Send Me High or Stephen Kotler is talking about that. I'm talking about flow as a natural state of just being. So when you meditate or when you rest, because you reduce the resistance, you allow the nature to take care of it. So the thing with achievers and with very energetic people is that we like to be in the state of resistance because this is how we feel that we are putting the effort into the whatever goal we are achieving. Mm. This is the paradigm that we've been brought up in. It's very normal. It's the same as if we go back to the gym, if you feel that you're not working out, you're adding weights. To the machines, right? So that you feel the burn because you need the resistance. The thing is that this hustling culture that we are living in right now, it says that you need resistance to feel worthy of your success. And right now I'm talking about success, not just financially. Imagine if we are talking about success, not as in your business, in your goal, in your meaning in life, but in success, succeeding to be happy.
Mm. Okay.
So you need resistance to achieve success. That's how we are brought up. That's why we're talking about sacrifice. What are you willing to sacrifice for your success, right? Are you willing to do the hard thing? Are you willing to work when others are not, or to to go through anything?
Yeah.
This is all resistance.
Yeah.
So what happens if you don't have resistance? You feel that your success is weird, not right, unsustainable, undeserved, right?
Yeah. That's I'm always on the go.
You do what you do in the gym. You add weights. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise you didn't deserve your success. And I'm sure you have friends like that as well. I might sound very rosy and fluffy, but actually I'm an entrepreneur and I'm a shark when it comes to business. And I have a lot of entrepreneurial friends, so I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I have friends who feel guilty to take a break. And they understand that they need to recharge. They do their like regular, whatever, spa days and meditation practices. But if it happens so that they get a rest, they feel guilty. Why? Because they think that they're not doing something, that they're not achieving something, that some results are going to be left on the table or on the tree, I do not know where, that, somebody else is succeeding. Well, that's a little bit funny, but some people do think that too. So we put ourselves into this constant hamster's wheel, because otherwise we don't feel worthy of our success. And the happiness is the same thing. If you think that you need to work hard for it, you're not getting happiness. Happiness is not about working hard. Well, your definition of happiness will be different from mine probably, but generally the feeling of bliss and at being at peace where you are is contrary to that desire to reach something. So happiness is actually the art of letting go, the art of being at peace with what you have, the art of being at peace with what you don't have, the art of being at peace with your inadequacies. That's contrary to resistance. It's flow.
Yeah.
So you can't reach happiness through resistance. On one side, I say, yes, let's prioritize happiness. Let's make it a study. But the experience of it is actually when you let go. Yeah. It's like, another simple analogy. I do not know if you play instruments, but probably you ride a bike. I don't actually, so it's harder for me to say. When you were learning something, do you play an instrument? I'd prefer an instrument. No.
I know. Okay, I bought a ukulele. I think I have it over there. But
let's ride a bike.
Yeah,
I'm still learning to ride a bike right now. So I know in the beginning it's hard, it's scary. You fall down. You can't. You have to put effort. Once you know something, you don't even think about that. you did on autopilot. Something else yes. doesn't. That's because you've stopped resisting. Happiness is the same thing. Yes, you learn it. Yes, you need to understand it. But the experience of it comes through letting go, not through trying hard.
All right. No, I get that. That's a perfect way to put it. Yeah. So I guess that is the answer for me. And I think that's maybe many of our audience are these go-getter entrepreneurs, active lifestyle people that are constantly wanting to up the ante, to biohack or to do this or to do that or to reach a level. But
I contradict myself right now.
Yeah.
But if that's what their definition of happiness, then okay. I think they should do that.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. But what if I or they, you know, are always on the go, and that's my, like, I love the go. I love the running. I love the challenge, the pain, the discomfort of pushing harder through layers of life. Right. I enjoy it. But when I have that downtime, it takes away, I'll take away that happiness. So is that really my definition of happiness? Like that go, like if I let go of it?
I don't, I can't make your definition of happiness, obviously.
Okay.
That's the thing. Why there's all this misunderstanding. The thing is that when you're born, it's point A, your success is point B. And we understand the path from point A to point B, because mm-hmm. that's being explained in our culture. Every culture has a very clear definition of success. And if you ask 100 people within the same cultural context, they will describe exactly the same person. So we understand this one path, yet happiness is not universal. It's personal. Yeah. So while you're going from point A to point B, and you know, it's not surprising that you don't feel happy, because your happiness could be point C, D, or whatever else. Mm. Okay. And you don't even ask yourself what it is. So in my opinion, if hustling makes you happy, great. If hustling, if something is, not there and you're questioning, then probably it makes sense to go deep into your questions and try to understand okay. why.
Cool. All right.
But if you don't have that itch, I'm not the one to come and tell you, like, you're wrong.
Yeah.
You should have family and kids and whatnot. It's not my job, because if you have never had a child, you don't even know what you're missing. So there's no point. You may be perfectly happy without knowing what you're missing. If you've never tried a durian, you don't know what you're missing. And you might be totally happy not have never tried a durian in your whole life. So it's not my job to explain what is happiness for you. If I was your psychotherapist, I'd probably ask you,
are you?
Why are you running?
And who are you running from?
But that's not my job.
Yeah.
If you're at peace with your running, that most likely you're quite happy. But if you're not at peace with your running, then here's the question. Do you want to understand why you're not at peace and do something about that? Or do you want to learn to be at peace with whatever life has given you?
I got the gears going. I love it. This is great, because I think so many people listening are going to have similar conversations in their mind now after this, go, huh, well, am I chasing something? Am I happy? I think this is so perfect, because I can.
But I'll tell you the biggest secret before I let you go.
Yeah.
There is, and I know people are going to hate me for that, but you're not successful because you're working hard, right? You know, the Pareto principle, 20% of your actions, 80% of your results. So I was a straight A student, a perfect Hermione when I was a kid. So when my parents went to school, they were told, Christina is really good, but you know, her grammar is a little off. She should work more on her grammar. And in school, how do you become successful? When you work on the things that you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was about 40 when I actually, because I have been perfectionist all my life, and I get the idea of doing the unpleasant work, eating the toad first. Mm-hmm. I get it. But my life changed massively when I came in my business. I came to a conclusion that I will only do the things that only I can do. And everything else that somebody else can do, even if they do it, even if I could do it better, and being perfectionist can do better a lot of things than other people, I will let them do those things. I'm a very leisurely person. And I know a lot of successful people, success is not being a hamster in a wheel, is not working 24/7. It's actually being in your full resourceful condition in the moment where you're doing the genius thing, the 20%. But unfortunately, we are so fascinated by the idea that you have to sacrifice everything to success, that you have to work hard, you have to pay for your success with blood, sweat, and tears, that we sometimes don't notice how we become slaves of our own businesses, of our own undertakings, our own endeavors. But you see, success is creation. Business is creation. And when you're in a hamster's wheel, if you're busy 24/7, you are in the mode of, maintenance, maybe execution, yeah. But definitely not creation. Creation doesn't happen in a hamster's wheel.
Yeah, maintenance is the worst word.
So one thing that I will tell you for a fact, whether you're happy or not, and I get it, I love being driven and busy and feeling, falling into bed on my pillow and like, oh, it was a good day. But the most genius things don't happen on those days. So you have to create space for yourself, even if it's not for happiness.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I mean, this is a phenomenal conversation. Like you said, I think we can have longer conversations about a lot of different directions and where you're an expert. And I love on your website to mention perfectionism. If y'all go to our website, it says, say no to perfectionism. And when you move, it's really cool. It kind of catches your eye. It spins in a circle. And that's what that caught me. I'm like, I think that's a reminder, which is great. So where are the best places for our audience to find you?
So being a co-founder of Mindvalley, it's my moral duty and obligation, and actually my personal desire as well, to say that, of course, come to Mindvalley, but I'm one of the many teachers there. So you will hear about me from time to time, but I have an Instagram account, which I would really dearly like to invite people, because that's where you see the real me. That's where things happen first.
Yeah, perfect. So yeah, so everybody, I will drop all of those details. The Instagram link, mindvalley.com, and even her personal website, because I want you to connect. Because if this was meaningful, this conversation was to all of you that are listening, dive deeper. I can tell you Mindvalley is an unbelievable resource for humankind. And I use it. I've watched so many videos. I've read books. I mean, I've been connected in so many different ways from the people in Mindvalley, the people that you bring in. That I learned from. Now I'm so grateful that I get to be with you for this short time. So I want to thank you, Lifestyle Locker, everybody, the whole audience wants to thank you for being part of our show, our tribe here today. And I want to wish you the best of success in life and especially happiness.
Thank you.